The following program is sponsored by Linda's Construction. This is the WCCO Home Improvement Show, brought to you by Linda's Construction. One call, one contractor. Linda's Construction provides Minnesota and Wisconsin with the best products and workmanship. They provide leaf guard gutters, asphalt roofing, metal roofing, season guard replacement windows, exterior siding, remodeling, new construction, and more. If you've got questions, they've got answers this hour. Here's Denny Long and Andy Lindis.
Andy's taking the day off today. Might be doing a little fishing. Well,
he hasn't told me, and sometimes when he's gone, I hear little rumors about what might be happening, but in this case, I don't know.
I don't think he's coaching hockey today.
I don't think so, not today.
It's a guess. But Barry Stranz is back with us. We're so glad when Barry fills in for Andy, because everybody knows their stuff with Lindis, but this guy, you've been around.
Well, I'm old.
No, you're not old. You're experienced.
I think that's funny, too, because it's amazing how much we learn by the mistakes we make.
That's how we learn.
Exactly. And so if you got 30 years of mistakes under your belt, you know, you got a 15-year run of some really good information you can pass on to people, because you know what not to do.
Well, let's, again, we always get new listeners. And by the way, if you have any kind of a home improvement question, you want to stump Barry.
Yeah, I keep thinking there should be a game called Stump the Contractor. And it doesn't mean I know everything, but it's fun to recognize. I have builders in classes when I'm teaching who will play that game with me a little bit. Stump the Contractor. Stump the Instructor in this case. And so they'll ask code questions and obscure questions. And sometimes you can answer them. And sometimes, you know, you just make up something that sounds good.
Well, let's talk about your multifaceted career for those that haven't heard before. I mean, you do teach.
I do teach.
You're a site supervisor.
I'm a site supervisor.
Is that the right term?
Kyle Hunt and Partners. Yeah, site soup is different than a project manager. A project manager handles the initial design and the financial end of things, and then continues to work with the homeowner about design change. The site supervisor is the guy who actually sees and does the things on the job site that must be taken care of. So I have to make sure all of our electricians and plumbers and drywall people and framing carpenters get all of their work done in time in the sequence that we've assigned to them, and then to the quality standards that we have as an expectation. And some days that gets to be daunting, because sometimes people gravitate to, it's 5 o'clock, I've got to go. I say, yeah, but you need to clean up first. You know, well, I'll get it tomorrow. We have a contract with you that says you'll clean up at the end of the day. You should have shut down 40 minutes ago so you could sweep. And if we have to sweep on your behalf, we'll have to charge you money for that. Oh, just let me go this time. You know, so then you have to negotiate all kinds of strange like things. Well, then you owe me. And sometimes you can leverage that owing to get people to do things another time.
But it's like a domino effect. If a sub or somebody doesn't show up.
Oh, yeah. It's horrible. It's horrible. Because you've set an expectation with your homeowner, who obviously is the person who's paying the bill and the one that you're so intently trying to please, to get it right for them. And then it's the company reputation, all of those things. And then if somebody in the queue steps out and doesn't show, then you can lose the slot with other contractors are scheduled to come in behind them. And then you're like, well, I can get there Tuesday where you scheduled me. I scheduled Tuesday for the work. But if I can't get there Tuesday, I can't get there for 2 weeks. Well, I need you Wednesday now because this guy didn't show up today.
Yeah.
Amazing the challenges that that creates.
A lot of sleepless nights.
Well, I'm trying to figure out a way to hold it less personally internally because it can cause a great deal of stress and still do it with as great a forthrightness and honesty and integrity as possible and yet not make it personal. Because otherwise it feels very much like, why am I doing this? This doesn't pay enough for this level of stress.
Well, besides you being in the construction business for all these years, how did you get involved with the teaching, especially things like code?
Oh, that's so funny, Denny, because I got a call on a Monday afternoon from a real estate friend of mine who said, hey, how would you like to talk to some of my real estate friends about how houses are built? And I'm thinking 4 or 5 of his friends sitting around his in-ground backyard pool, a very successful realtor, and I would just be the answer guy. And we'll do a little show and tell and walk around, a little Q&A. And I thought, great. So he says, well, meet me at the model home tomorrow at 1. So I show up at the model home a little bit before 1 o'clock, and there's some folks setting up concrete blocks with 2x12 lumber planks across the top, like for rows of bench seating. And I'm still totally naive. I said, so what's going on here today? Well, there's some people coming to hear you speak, he says. I'm like, well, how many people? Well, I don't know, like 75 or 80.
Oh, my God.
And there was a real estate class that I learned years later that a guy was supposed to come into town from South Carolina. He missed his flight, and I was the fill-in instructor.
Ah.
And I'd never done anything like this before. So I'm thinking, well, now I'm starting to get flop sweat. I was crazy. And then he had a concrete guy lined up who was terrible. He couldn't speak in complete sentences. And so in 5 or 6 minutes, they hooked him. He was supposed to be half the presentation on concrete and foundations. So then they push me up there, and the guy whispers to me kind of loud. He goes, "Hey, Barry, just go 2.5 hours. That's all you got to do."
Oh, man.
I don't have an outline. I don't have anything written down. I've got now, what, a 2.5 hour unrehearsed speech to give? Are you talking serious? It was the worst experience of my adult life. It was absolutely, and I'm thinking, well, the worst day of my life is now over. If this was 15 seconds of fame, great, but I'm now done. I'm never coming back. At the end, he goes, "Hey, Barry, you've got a gift. You could do this for a living." And I'm thinking, no, dude, I'm done. He goes, "Well, if you came back, I'm sure I could convince them to pay you." And as a young father with little children, I'm like, dang it, I need the
money. You need the bread.
That's how I started teaching.
Oh, that's wild. But what about code then? How did you? So there was a lot of studying there, right?
Well, I was started to teach real estate agents, and real estate agents didn't have that much construction information. So I could talk about basic construction topics, and it was fine. But when Minnesota began to license contractors, then I had to step it up. So I had to start learning the code. And I should say most builders and people listening would know that contractors, by and large, before licensure, they learned code from the things the building official told them they had to do. They learned the code from the enforcement process, from regulation. Now we send our builders to class to maintain their continuing education status as licensed builders, and they're learning stuff in the classroom so they can apply it in the field. So we're actually ahead of the educational curve. Rather than playing catch-up and reacting to code and code changes, we're actually teaching code and code changes prior to them taking place so people are in the know. As the code shifts, they're ready for it. It's a huge difference in our understanding.
Yes. I'll tell you what, let's invite our listeners to join in on the conversation. If you have any kind of a home improvement question you want to ask this guy, Barry, those questions, either by phone or by text, 651-989-9226 is the number, the phone number that is, or send a text 81807. Barry, I'm looking at the forecast, and in some areas, lots of rain either is or will be happening.
Yeah.
What can we think about
Danny,
with damage?
You should understand my week. Let me just explain to you that we had a project we built, I think, in 2015, and we have had a bewitching scenario regarding a skylight and trying to track down water intrusion. And it seems like one of the things that we have on roof surfaces, when a simple, let's say a gable 1950s rambler, you know, those are houses that are 24 feet deep and maybe 36, maybe 40 feet long. And they're a simple two-surfaced roof, a gable roof. When you get into more complex roofs where you have gables that come into gables or gables that come into hips or hips that come into gable roofs, you have more surface areas where water intrusion can be an issue. And what the building code has talked about is the thing we call flashing. And if you're out there today and looking at places where water might get in from deluge, let's say you have a window in a retaining wall recessed area into a sub-basement or something. The places where water wants to get in are places where we have a change in surfaces. Like we have siding here, now we have a door. We have siding here, now we have a window. Mm-hmm. We have siding here, now we have a roof. Where those connecting points take place, the detail is called flashing. And what we're trying to do is make sure we have a way for water to move always to the exterior to stay out of the building. We have learned so much in the last 30 years about proper ways to flash these details. But when houses were built prior to that information, a lot of them still have flashing details that are lacking. Mm. And so we end up with water intrusion. So let me give you one. Most builders would hear the term kick-out flashing and immediately know what I'm talking about. But most homeowners listening would not.
No.
Kick-out flashing is a specific piece, typically of metal, that will go where a roof line hits a side wall of a house. So let's say you have a two-story house and you have a one-story garage connected to the end of that two-story house. If that garage is set back a couple of feet from the face of the house, you'll end up with the roof line running into the side wall of the house. And at that roof joint where it meets the wall, water wants to run down there, and if we don't flash that correctly, it'll actually run behind the siding as it comes down the roof. It runs actually behind the siding and in between the siding and the framing of the wall assembly. Now, a 1950 home I worked on, you think 1950s quality construction?
Yeah,
absolutely. But that flashing piece was never even identified back then. So while caulking may have been smeared in that joint, sure, that would have been the best we ever did. So what you'll find is, in this case, was the house I was working on. We pulled the siding off to do some repair from woodpecker damage on these wood shingle siding products. As we pulled them off, all of the material behind this wall was rotted.
Yuck.
We had to open up all the way to the wall cavity, and we exposed the plaster, the backside of the plaster on the interior wall of the house, because
all
the exterior sheathing over the course of 50 years had rotted out, all because we didn't understand that the connection of that roof where it meets that wall must be flashed so that water can move to the exterior. Now, that's building code today. But that building code didn't come into place until 2009.
Before. Wow, interesting story.
So that's only been in our code for 10 years.
651-989-9226 or send a text 81807. So I'll tell you what, let's do this. Let's take a break.
Sure.
And we'll come back. We'll get on the phones and answer some text questions.
Fantastic.
And hear more.
Anything you want.
By the way, 2 weeks from today, what's going to happen?
Oh, we have the 40th anniversary of Lindus Construction, a big gala celebration.
Big one.
Out at their space. And you are going to be on.
We're going to do our show from
there. Live from there.
And there's going to be food. I can't imagine Lindus without food.
No. These guys, when they throw a party,
they know.
They throw it right.
All right. We'll talk more about that. In the meantime, folks, hang on. They're on the line. And if you want to send a text to Barry, that number 81807. And good morning. Welcome back to CCS Home Improvement Show, presented every week by our friends at Lindus Construction. I don't think I've spelled it yet. L-I-N-D-U-S. You want to get in touch with those good folks, 1-800-LEAF-GUARD, the easiest number to remember. Barry Strands is filling in for Andy Lindus today. And as we mentioned, as we're heading into the break, 2 weeks from today, the big celebration. I remember when we did the 30th anniversary broadcast.
And I think that's before my time with them.
And this is even going to be bigger.
Oh, yeah.
Their 40th anniversary. And the public is invited. They're in Baldwin, Wisconsin. And
Is a very pleasant drive.
Oh, it really is. Very easy drive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as a matter of fact. Especially when you see all those food trucks.
You're really excited about the food trucks,
well,
aren't you?
You know, you get up at 3 in the morning, you get hungry about this time of day.
You're so cute.
All right. Let's do this. Let me give the phone number. If you have any kind of a home, you want to talk to this guy, Barry Strands. He knows his stuff. Call Barry or text Barry. 651-989-9226. Text is 81807. Joan is calling from Oakdale, I believe. Joan, you're on with Barry.
Yes. I had an ice dam this year.
Sure.
I'm sure as many other people did.
Yes.
But mine leaked in down my window. And somebody said have my insulation checked that it may have shifted and be blocking something up there. They also suggested putting wiring in, which to me sounds very expensive. What would be the first thing I should probably do?
Well, investigation of ice dams is a little bit complex. I would need to know a little bit more about where the water came in. Let me just explain that when water gets in through the overhang of the roof, it'll back up underneath the shingles and typically run down that exterior wall. When you see it coming through a window, maybe a foot or foot and a half below the top of that wall surface within a room, it means the water is inside the wall cavity. And now it hits the horizontal piece, the top jamb of the window, and typically will leak out between the jamb and the casing. We'll see it dripping in that location. That means that whatever's up above, there's been a water pathway into or through that space. So I think the best practice right after it happens is ideal, is to open up that surface. If it's a drywall surface, we cut the drywall out, and then we examine the insulation and typically remove it because it's wet and make sure the cavity is allowed to completely dry. That if we do that in the first 48 hours after the wetting, typically wetting, it'll typically mean that there's no mold growth possibility in that space. Then we would re-insulate and then put the drywall back in place, patch, repair, sand, paint, and be done. Normally, the wood of a wood jamb on a window, an older window certainly, would not typically see much damage to it. It might cause the wood to, as it swells, displace slightly, and then as it dries, it'll go back to its original position often, and then we caulk and paint those joints and seams. So that's relatively straightforward. Getting up into the attic is the real battle to see what might have taken place in that space. If you haven't got physical space to address that, that's the greatest complexity. the idea of putting wire on the roof is designed as a heat surface that then would melt ice on the roof surface. Most roofing manufacturers will say that that will void the warranty of the roofing products, particularly asphalt shingles. We don't really like to do that. That's not our first choice. We prefer to keep the snow and ice off the roof surface, which is causing the ice dam in the first place. Now, as you know, Joan, this was a particularly damaging winter for ice dams. And if it's not been a regular problem in a given location, most of the builders and of the remediation professionals that we are working with and talking to would suggest that you just simply keep the snow off the edge when it builds up as a better than to spend quite a bit of money, actually, to do a heat tape to try to melt snow on the roof surface. It's a lot of words. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it really does. And, you know, I was thinking, too, it wouldn't be a bad idea for her to call Lindis because they'll come out and look at at least the attic area, just the area for free.
Yep. When you can find a contractor like Lindis that will do that work for free, it's such a benefit. And obviously they're hoping to get work from you, but the way they do that is a lead generation source is to do those initial investigations for nothing.
And one of the best roofers in the country.
Oh, yeah, these guys are terrific.
Hang on, Barry. We're going to take a break. We have another half hour of the show to go. If you have a question, 651-989-9226. Send Barry a text, if that's easier, 81807. Good morning. Welcome back to CCS Home Improvement Show, brought to us by Lindis Construction. Barry Strands filling in for Andy Lindis today. And Barry, we got that's why I usually spell the Lindis name, because I always ask Andy at least once in a while, have you hired a Linda yet? Because it's Lindus, L-I-N-D-U-S.
And some people are hearing it as Lindus, apostrophe S.
Yeah, right. Sure. Well, it sounds like.
No, L-I-N-D-U-S, Lindus.
And they wanted the phone number, and I mentioned it earlier, but I'll mention it again, 1-800-LEAF-GUARD. And somebody will say, well, that's too many letters. It'll still ring.
Right, try it.
Yeah.
It works.
1-800-LEAF-GUARD, L-I-N-D-U-S, Lindus Construction. If you want to ask Barry your question via phone, 651-989-9226. Text is 81807. Jerry, you're on with Barry.
Barry, I want to talk to you about fiberglass or denim insulation for my new windows. I have a 1914 home with the weight pockets. They're going to remove the weights, and they'll be stuffing the weight pockets with insulation. And they'll be in the rooms tearing the fiberglass insulation, stuffing it into the weight pockets. Isn't that kind of hazardous? And wouldn't denim insulation, which is supposedly non-hazardous, wouldn't that be a better choice?
Well, there's a lot of opinions about insulation and potential carcinogens with fiberglass, all kinds of issues in that regard. My personal preference when you remove weight pockets is to first spray foam against the exterior of the wall sheathing in that location. That way you get an airtight seal against air intrusion and then fill the rest of the cavity up with fiberglass. That'd be my first choice. Today's fiberglass is far less prone to the fibers being released and as a result much less itchy for those who install it. And once it's encapsulated inside that wall space, it's not a health hazard of any kind. So, yes, you could argue that denim is safer. But, again, once it's in the wall cavity, it won't affect anything because it's not going to get out of that space. I don't find that denim insulation's higher price point justifies its use, but there are those who do. And I certainly wouldn't argue loudly with them if that's the preference. Go with it. I just personally think that fiberglass has been a tried and true product, and we've used it for a long time. It will need, if you don't put a foam barrier in first, it will need a vapor retarder over the inside face of that so that vapor can't migrate through it and then hit the outside wall surface in winter conditions and go into a condensation issue. So keep that in mind. If you go to any type of any insulation that is prone to vapor migration, so any of our loose fills or any of our, let's say, bat insulations, be they denim or be they cotton or be they fiberglass, all of those products, or mineral wool, another one, must have a vapor retarder over the warm in winter side of that wall surface, even in something as narrow as the weight pocket, a 2 or 2.5 inch space. Those will still need it.
I never heard of that, but denim.
Yeah, well, cotton insulation has come along in the last 15 years or so and has grown because of its green friendliness and, and the way it's developed. It has a lot of market presence in the green community.
Okay. Text number, if that's easier, 81807. Here's a text came in. Bought a foreclosure. Previous owners must have been heavy smokers. New carpet I put in, new paint, walls, ceiling, still smells like smoke. Any suggestions? That's a tough one.
You know, it is. I bought my house when I live right now with my family. We had a similar situation. We actually sprayed 409 on the walls, and it was as though root beer floats of tar and nicotine were coming down
no
the wall.
Kidding.
It was really bad. Now, our walls were plaster, so we didn't have as much migration of the smell or odor into the framing materials. But what I was aware of is when we pulled up the carpet in our home, if we didn't replace the sheathing, if you get down onto that surface of the wood below, you'll see that there's actually smell from smoke in the floor boards themselves.
Wow. Penetrates that.
Yeah, it does. It gets through carpet and gets into that space. So when you put new carpet over, you think you've solved it. I always tell people that if they're going to do a heavily smoked house and you want to get rid of the odor, then it's a good idea to use a spray of paint, a sealant like Kills or a Zinsser's Bullseye, and spray over that surface with a pressure sprayer and just get a coat of that and encapsulate that odor. It really amazingly helps in the process. But once you've already carpeted, to pull the carpet back and try to solve that, it's kind of annoying. There are air products like an air sponge that are designed to be in a space that will absorb odors in that space, and you'll see immediate relief. And air exchange will be another thing that you can do so that you're ventilating, bringing fresh air in and exhausting stale air. Both of those are options to help mitigate the odor. But if you don't encapsulate the source, you are going to have trace smoke smell in that house for quite some time.
Phew. Wow. 651-989-9226. That's the phone number if you want to call it in. Text is 81807. Barry, it says, the text, you familiar with Dura Supreme cabinets made in Howard Lake? Are they good cabinets to put in our new house? That comes from Leslie from Cokato, Minnesota. Have you ever heard of that brand?
Oh, sure. Yeah, and Dura Supreme are fine cabinets. I mean, I have no problem with them. Leslie, I would only it's always about what you're looking at. Price point, finish, warranty, and then keep in mind that the quality of the installation is paramount to your experience of the cabinetry. So a great cabinet maker with a lousy installation is going to feel to the homeowner like, these are lousy cabinets. Look, they don't work. These slides don't come out. They're not doing what they're supposed to do. But every manufacturer who creates what we'll call a pre-manufactured or box cabinet, their quality of that work can be seen in the drawers, whether they're dovetails or how they're connected and hooked together, and then exactly how we use hardware in those spaces. And typically, companies will offer a variety of hardware options as the price point grows. They'll have a base or a low end, and then they'll have a mid-range, and they'll have a higher end. And as we go up the scale within their company line, we will see different quality differences and details that then we might select. So within any brand of cabinet that's pre-manufactured, check with the salesperson from the supplier, whether that's a big box store or whether that's an independent kitchen cabinet company, and look at the level of detail that you want within the product's fabrication quality. That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, okay.
And then the installer becomes another issue. If they install and warrant differently when they install, I think it's worth spending a little bit more to have them install their own cabinetry.
I agree.
Because you'll get a warranty then that will last for you.
Absolutely. Makes sense. 651-989-9226, text 81807. We are fixing up our garage. Texter says we do have storage above. We're afraid the ceiling will continue to crack at the seam. There's a product there named Goodbye Cracks by Goof Off. It's not on anyone's shelves. What else works? It says it's stretchy. You follow that?
Well, whenever you put load on a surface that's greater than what that was designed to carry, you risk that there's some deflection in the rafter member, and then you'll see separation of drywall. It's not uncommon to see that. The problem is we tend to want to then solve the topical crack that we see in the drywall. We don't want to stop the movement that's causing it. So we're putting a Band-Aid over an infection, and we're hoping the Band-Aid will last and solve our infection problem. And in my mind, Danny, it just seems like if we can stabilize the movement, then you can repair a crack and have a greater level of success. So there's a thing called strong back, which basically is going up into the rafter assembly and tying all of the rafters together with a vertical piece that would function like a miniature beam. Now, it will constrict how flat the surface is up there for storage, but it will also stabilize those joists and allow them to operate as one unit. That's going to maintain integrity of the surface, and then a repair that's done is going to make a lot more sense. Now, most homeowners will have no idea what I mean when I say strong back, but most builders would. And if you know someone in the construction business that's done framing, ask them about a strong backup. And that rafter assembly, anchoring that and tying that together is a really good idea before you go after trying to solve a superficial crack caused by load deflection in the attic space.
That makes sense. Never heard that term myself. All right. Let's go back to the phones. I think Randy in Woodbury has a question or comment. Go ahead, Randy. Thank you.
I got a comment for you with the fellow that had the smoke-infested house.
Oh, yeah.
We had the same thing in a Rambler in Bloomington. The entire house was repainted out, you know, inside, replaced the carpeting, textured the ceilings, and I still had the smoke smell for a long time. It wasn't until I gutted my kitchen and replaced the kitchen cabinets that I got rid of the smoke smell.
No kidding.
It's all over, and it was the kitchen cabinets that
absorbed all that.
That's a great thought. The other thing that occurred to me after we hung up with that caller was the ductwork may need to be cleaned as well.
Oh, yeah. Does that work?
Oh, yeah.
Thanks, Randy, by the way. Thanks for that input. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Talk about that, because we're thinking about doing that.
Well, I think after every – in fact, in our company's paradigm, every time we do a construction project, duct cleaning at the close of the project is our normal. We just build that into the price of every job, because – from drywall dust, as you know, getting into those little places, and then whatever debris was there prior to our arrival on a remodel, and then anything we've done in a new construction home, we just clean them. And that process then gives the homeowner a nice, fresh introduction to better air quality in their space. I'm not an advocate of every year cleaning the ducts. There are some who would say that.
Overkill?
I think it is. Yeah. And if you're selling duct cleaning, then obviously those guys would say, hey, every year, do your ducts. But I think that you should be on a 3 to 5 year duct cleaning schedule. You'd be surprised at how much junk is basically being distributed on a forced air furnace now we're talking about.
Yeah, sure.
No oil or a hot water heat distribution method. So if you do that on a regular basis, the air quality is just going to be enhanced. It's a better option. And then filtration issues with your filter in your furnace are also critical. We think about filters maybe in the wintertime because our furnace is running all the time. We just don't think air conditioning is going to cause that same system to need to have filter replacement. And there's as much airborne or more airborne debris coming to the home with windows and doors open in the spring and summer months than there would be in the winter.
I know we talked about that. I bet it was 20 years ago here on CISO, but this duct cleaning procedure. I can't remember exactly how that's done. Have you ever seen it done?
Oh, sure. And most of these guys will come in with a big trailer attached to a pickup truck, and they'll drive that back up, and that's their huge vacuum. So they will run that off the generator in that truck. Then they'll hook up some large hoses, and they'll actually get into the ductwork of the main furnace unit. And they'll run a beater rod through the duct from each port location, either the cold air return or the heating supply. And as they vibrate within that space, basically kind of scrubbing, then they're under negative pressure, high vacuum concentration, and they're sucking all of that out. And then, of course, they're catching it outdoors out of the building. So they run these pipes, if you will, tubes, all the way into the home and find access points, especially in a very large house. They'll come in through windows on the second floor. And the companies that are good at this, especially those who are working in our kind of higher-end houses, they know they can't scratch anything. They can't damage a windowsill. So they take super-duper precautions to make sure everything is done in a way that you can't scratch a corner piece of an enamel trim or a handrail, that kind of thing. So the higher-end companies, they charge you a little bit more, but then you don't have to worry about their workmanship causing issues down the road.
All right. Interesting. All right, Barry, hang on. We have to take a quick break. If you have any kind of a home improvement question, either by phone or by text, and we'll get back to the text screen in just a moment, or call 651-989-9226. Again, text number is 81807. And good morning. Welcome back to CISO's Home Improvement Show, brought to us by Lindus Construction. I'll spell it again. Lindus, 1-800-LEAFCAR. They have some great deals going on. If you're looking for roofing or windows, siding, gutters.
Yep.
And if you're looking for some good food.
In 2 weeks.
You know I was going to say that.
2 weeks, you're going out to Baltimore.
2 weeks from today, their 40th anniversary celebration. And it's not just us folks invited. You all are, too, in Baldwin. Lindus Construction.
It's
40 years.
It's going to be fun, gang. It's going to be fun.
Still a family-run business.
It's going to be a celebration party atmosphere.
Absolutely. Somebody has a comment about the caller and what we talked about, this denim insulation.
Sure.
It says here, and I'll quote it, the reason that people like me, texter, will purchase denim insulation is because it has a better value for sound reduction than regular insulation. I think that should be noted if one is going to go for soundproofing.
Yeah, I don't have the sound transmission ratings memorized for various insulation materials. I like spray foam for that reason because it's going to trump anything else on the market today. But those are some of the reasons. We have a lot of different reasons that we're going to use material. R value per inch, for example, and the ease of installation would be another one. Price point, another one. Sound transmission, another one. And the hardest part when you do a radio show is to try to talk about all of those way that's intelligent. And there's some things I just don't know. I mean, there's insulation products out there that I just haven't researched very well. And I talk a class to real estate agents on various insulation types. And you just start going, okay, I got 15 different insulation types to talk about. And what does a realtor need to know? And because they're going to see dominantly, you know, fiberglass and spray foam. Those are going to be the two that are going to be most common. Or cellulose blown in, for example.
Sure. All right, 651-989-9226, text 81807. We've got some other texts we could answer here. Let's see. I'm having carpets installed soon. I react, texter says, to the fumes from things like new carpeting. Will anything remove the fumes quickly?
Oh, man, that's a great question. I'm probably not the best person to answer that, but a lot of the ingredients in in carpet have included a formaldehyde-based product, and there are different types of formaldehydes, and some of the off-gassing takes place more rapidly and in the presence of heat. So I was looking at a discussion about 10 years ago about formaldehyde in homes, and if you crank the heat up to 85 or 90 degrees and let it sit there for 3 days, then ventilate everything, you could actually exhaust formaldehyde in some fabrics more rapidly than a slower release that would take place over time. But I have not researched that stuff recently to be able to tell you what the current levels of formaldehydes are in fabric materials. But it's worth at least pressing into that question, and probably Mr. Google knows some of that.
I bet. There is a roofing question here, Barry. How does one get rid of moss on roof shingles on the north side of the house? I before Linda's came around to put some new roofing a few years ago, I saw that on the north side of our house, a little bit.
Sure.
Not just algae, but actually moss.
Yep. Well, if it's built up as clumps, for example, of moss on a wood roof, we recommend power washing from the top down. Now, that's very difficult to do, but that would be a way to get the chunks, if you have a wood roof, chunks of moss off the surface. If you're talking about streaking from algae, then obviously something across the top of the roof surface makes the most sense. And whenever we use a zinc oxide strip and that hits water, that will release this chemical that will kill algae on the roof surface. Now, it'll have some impact on moss, but it won't be as substantial. So you end up needing to actually topically remove the moss from the surface, and most would recommend power washing. But you've got to be so careful. And on an asphalt roof, if you're knocking granules off of a roof that's 15 years old, then the question is, how valuable is it to try to tackle that with power washing to get moss chunks off the roof so that then you can address algae as well? I'm not certain that there's a much better answer than that. Some people have used fungicides to get stuff off the roof chemically, but again, you have to get up on the roof to do that. And so there's a huge safety issue.
Oh, I guess.
And in my mind, the length of the roofing material versus the risk versus the timeline of replacement all have to be factored in before you jump up there to try to solve that.
We had talked a bit, at least you mentioned foam insulation. But the texter wants to know, what do you think of the cans of foam, spray foam, that you find at big box stores?
Well, they're excellent for the purposes that they're intended. They're not designed to insulate an entire wall cavity, obviously, but around a window. We still use this, you know, most popular brands are being used to inject foam around a window opening or a door opening prior to the trim being installed. So it's still a very common product and a very useful product. Like it very much. Use it all the time.
You had mentioned it, but the texter may have missed what you suggested. How often should your home air ducts be cleaned? What did you say?
Well, my recommendation is every 3 to 5 years, and that's depending on the lifestyle of the home, how many people you have, dogs, cats, you know, those kind of pet issues. That might require that you vacuum more frequently, take those ducts and get them cleaned. It depends on – that's why the range in my mind is a 3 to 5 year range. It's going to depend on lifestyle. I have 11 kids, so, you know – it's a little different world when you got much stuff going on.
It makes me tired just thinking
about
it.
Plus, I have a shop in my basement where I'm working on stuff all the time and generating dust down there, and my dust collection system is adequate. But it's
how
not
do you deal with that? That's a big issue.
I've got an internal dust collector. That's a two-part system that separates my big chunks from my fiber, the fine dust, and collect it and bag it, and then have to bring it out. But it doesn't mean that there's not some residual wafting in the air, you know. And so I have a 4-inch hose that runs to my major pieces of equipment, but I've got a couple of saws that don't have dust protection built into them. And I have a sander that I've just now picked up, a dust collector for my sander, my little orbital. And until I had that, that sander would run randomly without any dust protection at all. And then just, you know, you can see it in the air. So I've got an air cleaning unit as well. So I've got two things going on, vacuuming and I've got air cleaning, but still you'll get dust. And people are like, hey, Dad's working downstairs. I can tell. Look.
It's everywhere.
You know,
Dad's
it's not
everywhere.
That bad. It's not drywall dust, but it isn't. It's not. You'll notice. It's there.
Texter says this, Barry. Large flakes spalling off the face of outside of concrete block foundation. What could be the cause? Have you seen this?
Well, yeah. When I first started in the business and dating my now wife, I went to her father's home to visit, and he had this spalling of the concrete block. And I ended up putting a skirt around the entire thing to keep water off of it. Did a nice little cedar skirt with vertical tongue and groove cedar to so you couldn't see it. Now, there are topical products that can go over the surface of this, but water gets in, and as concrete ages, sometimes we lose some of what we'll call the glue in the mortar of the concrete. And then as water inhibits or gets into that, I should say, into the surface, we have more of the releasing spalling from that with freeze-thaw cycle because it gets wetter on the foundation. So you can coat that with materials. I still like to go over the whole surface with a cementitious-based paint, which will help so that we're not exposing the raw concrete to water. And that's one of the most inexpensive solutions that you can create is a paint designed to be put on block and exterior design. That paint will help immensely keeping the water out, and typically water's the culprit for that spalling.
Okay.
Hey, can I shout out a friend?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Jeff and Sleepy Eye, this is for you. Hi, sir. I have right now, Denny, two daughters engaged to two of his sons.
You're kidding.
Both getting married in 2019. So
from Sleepy
he sent me a text saying he was listening. So yeah,
he's from Sleepy Eye.
Yeah, yeah, fantastic guy.
That's where my wife was born.
That's a great spot.
Yeah.
So nice anyway, sorry, personal note.
No, I think that's good. I'm glad we're able to do that. Let's see. Okay.
Did I throw you off?
No, not at all. I'm just looking at the clock and thinking we've got probably less than 60 seconds. Yes, less than 60 seconds to go. What causes, I'll briefly summarize this because it's kind of a long paragraph, a concrete driveway pop-outs. What causes pop-outs, I guess I'll put
again, it's water, but oftentimes it's exacerbated by the salt that we use on our driveways. In fact, most builders wisely say if you put salt on your driveway, you avoid the concrete manufacturer's warranty of the material.
Just like that.
Yeah, there's like – by the way, concrete – boy, shoot, I'm trying to think of the website. But if you go to concrete.com or look for concrete, they have an informational site relative to the product line that will explain the top 10 reasons you have spalling on concrete driveways.
Barry, it's good to see you. Maybe we'll see you at the 40th anniversary.
I look forward to that. I'm hoping so.
All right, good. Thanks. Barry Strands filling in for Andy Lindis today.